You're all stable on the cliff now, looking at this gigantic chasm. The chasm itself is 40 feet by 120 feet.
Jesus.
Yeah.
It's like a cathedral underground.
It is. It's kind of interesting. It doesn't look natural. It looks like it was cut, or maybe it's a conduit for something.
So, as a gnome, or a person of the earth, can I have, not strength related at all, might I add, the gnome make a check to see whether or not he recognizes anything about the building or the carving out of this? Like, do we get any information?
Yeah, you can make a check.
Okay. 12.
You think it looks almost like a den or a burrow of some kind. And Trez will make a check. So Trez says that this reminds him of the purple worm burrows.
Fuck!
But there's nothing in it, and it looks like there hasn't been for a long time. So it's empty, but you do think that he thinks that it reminds him of the purple worm burrow.
I mean, it's going to be some totally sellable poison in here, potentially. So as we look across here, like, is it, like, are we at a point where there's an expanse and we can, you know, make our way across? Do we see any signs of habitation other than natural? Like, what are we looking at?
It's just a big scoured hole in the ground.
So I don't see any entrance or exits or pathways or anything at all, corridors?
Nope. Well, I mean, the burrow itself leads out in a different direction. So you could rappel down to the bottom if you had enough rope, and you could follow the burrow if you wanted. But there's no, like, civilized, there's no bridges, there's no nothing. It looks like just a big hole where a purple worm would curl up to go to sleep, basically.
I would like, now that we're down here, did I fasten this rope leading down into the cavern as Co in a way that, like, with a, you know, those really clever knots, right? Like, here's this intricately wrapped knot where if you, you know, solid as a rock could move an entire jet, but if you, you know, pull this little thing or shimmy it this way, it all comes undone, right?
Make an intelligence check. D20, no modifier. Actually, you know what? Even better. Just roll a D6 and tell me even or odds.
Fuck. Odd.
So, yeah. If you wanted to pull on it, you could be very clever, and either your knot was just shit, Or you were real smart.
Yeah, we're going to go with it was, like, Co knew that it was shit, but he's going to, like, it's a great knot. Like, I mean,
great knot. It was 2 inches away from failing, and I just happened to get down.
I had to play, and he was a sailor, and I had to learn a lot about knots. So let me tell you, knotty by nature right here.
And Prima just turns her back on you and is very disbelieving. That didn't happen. Yes.
I'm going to retrieve the section of rope that belongs to Co. Co will pass that along to Bruff, and Bruff will fashion the two together in a slightly more secure and stable knot, looking with disapproval and distrust on his co-adventurer. And we'll try and use the longer rope to repel himself or direct himself towards wherever this path or cave leads.
So You and Boof might be having a good moment, but the dwarf is not really interested in going down these purple worm caverns. So he basically tells you to go pound sand. There's no way he's going down there. And fuck you, the treasure's up here. Let's go back to the tunnel so that we can find the cool stuff. And Prima seems more interested in the tunnels than she is in the purple worm cavern.
Okay, then, you know, Cole will throw his hands up and, you know, resignation, say, all right, I don't want to be. We'll go down the well-trodden path, and he will change gears.
Okay. So, Prima happens to have amazing jumping capacity, because she's very tall. So she will just jump and hook her way up to the tent, to the, yeah, okay. So she'll just leap up, grab the ledge, and swing herself onto the ledge without any problem, and just leave you. Let's see, what will the dwarf do? The dwarf, 13. The dwarf will hook his double-sided battle axe onto the ledge and also pull himself up. What would you guys like to do?
So, Ko will look over to Bruff and say, you know, man, I hate to ask, but, like, these legs, not what they were, like, 20 minutes ago. Piggyback? And we'll hop on the back of Bruff, who will, I am assuming, try and scale this.
Let's see if Bruff lets you get on his back. He does.
And now I'm assuming that taking a crowbar from my pack, tying the rope to the crowbar, and throwing it over as a grappling hook, and trying to hoist as Bruff the weight of two up this is going to be with disadvantage.
Roll a d6. Tell me odds or evens.
Even.
Okay, your first attempt is a failure. Want to try again?
No. Brooke will shrug off the small, angsty, womanizing creature and try and make it on his own.
Okay.
And that is going to be a 9.
It's enough. It beats my roll, so there you go. So Boof makes it up.
And now, with disadvantage.
How are you, what are you doing to get up there? Are you just jumping?
No. So I took the crowbar from my Dungeoneering Adventurer's kit, right? Tied the rope to that, threw that over the edge, and okay, got to latch on something. So that rope's still hanging from Bruff. And now Ko is going to try and climb up that same rope with a 10 being the lesser of two d20s.
Okay, so first of all, the crowbar didn't stick to anything. Bruff can just jump it.
Oh,
so
yeah,
he can
okay.
just grab the ledge and swing himself up. You, however, are very small, and you cannot do that. So, would you like to try your crowbar thing again? Would you like to ask Bruff for help, or ask one of the other people for help, or what would you like to do?
Ko is prideful, especially mm-hmm. in the presence of a woman.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
Prima's left you by now. She does not care.
Well, I mean, she will know, right? Whether or not she can smell whether or not I did this on my own.
Sure.
So I'm gonna climb up by my own, you know, two arms. That's a 12.
Okay. Well, let's see if it beats mine. It does not. You fail. What would you like to do? At this point, Trez and Prima are gone. They're continuing their exploration.
They've already found the treasure.
Yeah. And let's see if Woof is still hanging out with you. And I think he's giving you the eye like, dude, how did I get stuck with the delinquent?
Like, use your words, you stupid small creature with a gimp leg.
Yep.
Man, can you hoist me up? And he will ask for help being hoisted.
Okay. So let's see how Boof feels about that. He doesn't really want to. He says, you know, he's like, well, you're kind of a pain in the ass. We could just leave you down there. Are you going to give me anything for helping you? What can you offer me, small person, to make me actually want to help you with this stupidity? The others are already gone. I could just leave you here.
I will help you slaughter and maim the people who killed your family.
Do you know about that yet? Or are you just out for treasure with a bunch of adventurers and you guys haven't had your come to Jesus moment yet?
I think we have, right? Mm-hmm. Everyone here, for the most part, is smart enough to be skeptical. So I'm assuming they've exchanged a little bit. But he'll say, you know, I think he'll use that as a bargaining chip. And he'll say, you know what? We get out of this alive. Not that we're going to. And if you die, I certainly don't have to do it. But if we both make it out alive, then I will help you seek whatever retribution you wish.
He says, no. Give me something else.
Firstborn?
Is that your actual offer?
Yes.
He says, no. Give me something else.
I will give you quarter of whatever loot I get, assuming that it's divisible.
Does he get first pick?
Assuming that it is a divisible item or items.
He says, I'm not sure how this is going to work. What, you're just going to let me rifle through your stuff and I can maybe get some gold? I mean, what if you get something cool?
At this point, you're just going to start climbing back up the rope. How does a 16 treat me?
You don't have a rope. It didn't tie to anything.
Fuck! Can I make a check to throw the rope again?
You can. Go ahead.
Is that a d20 or a d6?
Do a d6. Odds or evens?
It's a 1. Odd.
Good. It catches something.
Yay! Now I'm going to roll to try and climb myself up again.
With disadvantage. Roll it twice. Take the bottom number.
No, I've got 2 d20s in my hand. Thank you. Lower of 2 is 12.
It's good enough. Get on up there. All right, so you managed to take care of it, but now you know that your companions are dicks, so.
Yeah, well, he smells like a dog.
So when you get up to the top, you feel a crisp winter wind kind of blowing through, cleaning out the last of the poison from this tunnel. Prima and Trez are way ahead of you guys. Boof just kind of like shrugs and turns away from you and starts catching up with the others. Do you want to do anything?
I would like to just, both of them I think will follow and try and catch up with the other two. Lest somebody get to the loot first.
Okay. So you can catch up with them. Because Prima has found something very, very promising. Let's see what she finds. She finds a scroll, but it's in a language that she can't read because she's a barbarian. So she's sort of poking through this, what looks to be like an old cabinet or something. And there are some scrolls. There is a, looks like a book of monsters. So a bestiary of some kind.
And the two of us are walking up as this is happening, right?
Yes. So she's got at her feet a whole bunch of books. It looks like, she found a book of pressed flowers, a bestiary. There's some scrolls that are tied with unusual crests and symbols and wax groups. And there's a book in particular that is pressed with a very odd sigil in the middle of it that you are very unfamiliar with, but it looks very valuable.
Looks like gold pressed latinum. And I will hobble my way over inconspicuously, looking at other things, admiring, these are beautiful cavernous walls. I mean, do you see the time that this probably took for water to carve this while trying to stealth away the valuable scroll?
Okay, make a sleight of hand contest against Trez.
How does a five treat you?
Yeah, you fail, and Trez totally pockets that, and you're looking right at him when he does it, and he's just sort of smiles at you like, "It's mine now."
All right, I'm gonna pickpocket your corpse.
Prima doesn't notice any of this because she's poking with this scroll that has a beautiful like iridescent ribbon and an odd wax seal on it. So she's busy looking at something else that looks fantastically valuable.
Would this be an elven scroll?
Let's find out.
You said luminous.
It would not. It would not be Elven, and in fact, it is not in a language that any of you can read or identify, but it is incredibly beautiful.
Think that. Yeah, Ko's gonna try and take it too.
Okay. So you're going to do a strength contest against Prima because she's holding it in her hand.
So does that mean disadvantage?
Yep.
13.
Okay, she rips it back out of your hands and punches you in the face.
For how much damage?
You will take
It will take it.
5 damage. You are down to 24.
Thank you, man.
Yeah. Okay. So you found all these books, and Prima has some star charts. She has this beautiful scroll, and she's going to try and open it. So,
I would like to take a step back as.
as Boof or as Quo?
No. As Bruff. So Bruff, being slightly more intelligent than his counterparts, is
Yeah.
going to step out of, let's say, 15 feet back.
That seems like a good number. Let's see what happens when she opens this scroll. If she can open it. So the scroll doesn't budge. Even with her strength, she can't seem to break the ribbon or the seal on it. And it, in fact, the more effort she puts to try and break it, it starts to glow more and more intense, and it's a beautiful, like, golden glow.
So, Ko will look at this and say, sometimes force isn't the way, and you must caress your way to riches.
Ew.
And we'll reach out for this. Now, does Ko get his hand slapped away?
Let us find out. No, he does not. So I guess Prima gives you sort of a suspicious glance, and then she will very ostentatiously, hand you the scroll and wait. She has a weighted club, so she's just going to hold that very definitively so that if you try and run or take her thing, she's going to beat you to death with the club.
And so fair, reasonable. While I want to parcel tongue this one, the Hasatha, I'm gonna try, and as Co. have a moment of clarity and hand it to the natural creature that is the elf.
Uh-huh.
And try and get Bruff to gracefully open this bewitching thing.
Okay. So Bruff is going to give it an 10.
And roll an even in case we're doing a check to see whether or not Bruff will even do it.
He does not. He can't open it either.
All right. Then battle axe it.
Okay, roll a strength contest, because when you try and cut it apart, Trez will immediately slam his axe into yours. Strength contest, disadvantage.
What, hypothetically, right?
Uh-huh.
Would a natural one get me?
It would get you some damage, because he rolled a natural 20.
A movable object.
Yeah, so as you are about to bring your axe down on this scroll to open it, Trez just sort of, like, underhand hits you like a baseball bat. So he just literally takes his double-sided warhammer and just, like, scoops you off the earth and flings you to the side, and you will take...
12.
He'll be using it two-handed, so that's a d12. You'll take 11 damage.
I was so fucking close. I'm almost bloodied at this point.
Yeah. Okay, so you're looking pretty rough, and Trez will be like, "Don't break the merchandise."
Fair. Fair.
So, at this point, Primo will sort of take it back and she'll pocket it. And Trez will throw a fit because he wants it, and she'll tell him that he already got the other book. She saw him take it and quit being a dick. This one's hers.
So, in knowing this is supposed to be the place of a warlord, in resignation, Ko would like to go ahead and look around and see whether or not there's any weaponry.
Okay.
Like, maybe even fallen bodies of those adventurers come before, you know, whatever.
Okay, yeah, let's see, we've got, so let's see how you do. Roll a d20 and tell me what you get.
12.
So, you do notice that there's a pool of water at the far end of the room. And you notice that there is a chirping sound coming from deeper into the this alcove in this tunnel, this ancient tunnel. And you see that this might have been someone's room, or like a little apprentice's or a watchtower guard room or something. It's a tiny little room with a brazier and a brazier. I think it's brazier. Yeah. Brazier and a little cot and what might have been a little library, which is where all the books fell out of. And this is the first time you can see some damage in the room. So it doesn't look like that smooth, clean, unusually non-dirty ancient hall that you just came from. Yeah.
Got it. Can I tell what kind of damage this is? Like, are the walls scorched? Are there claw marks of a dragon talon variety, for example? Just throwing out things. Owlbear.
So, are you in the room yet, or are you just checking stuff out?
I am in resignation, hobbling, torch in hand, axe in the other, into the room in that direction.
So you actually see what looks to be a skeleton kind of in the corner of the room, and you can see almost etch marks like acid burns all around the wall, and the body itself, the bones have been etched as if they were dipped in acid.
Well, then, do I get any sense of how long ago this was?
No.
Hmm.
And you also, so there is still a faint smell of that poison. So there is a smell of chemicals and that sickly sweet, sugary smell still in the room, but not bad enough that you notice it. Not bad enough that it affects you, but enough to notice you.
Mm-hmm.
Notice it.
I would like to go and inspect this ruckus.
Okay. Prima will go with you. Well, wait, let me see. Trez will go with you. And what you find is when you cross the threshold of the room, again, you are overcome with someone else's memories. So in this, you see a young boy almost, looks like an apprentice of some kind, furiously studying. It's like he's trying to hide the books that you just saw in the cabinet. And you see him cast what might have been, you know, an illusion spell or some spell that you don't recognize to hide these books. And then all of a sudden the door is blasted apart and you see his memory of being killed by this acid. As if you're the boy.
Got it. Dumbledore, no! Sorry. Interesting. Then I'm going to go closer. And is there the corpse and bones of this former boy?
Yeah, you can see the boy. You know it's the boy. You know that intuitively. And you can see there's nothing left of him but bones. All the organic material has been burned away. It looks like his bones have been etched by something. And there may... Any flesh is long since either removed or disintegrated.
Then I would like to see if there are any, you know, books or anything of any variety left around from this fiasco and tragedy. Truly. I mean, a child destined for great things.
Yeah, sure, whatever. Yeah, no one cares. So Trez is already looting the room, so he's basically like overturning stuff and shaking out cabinets and whatever. And nothing unusual falls out, so it's just basic knickknacks of being an apprentice, probably of magic of some kind. There's journals and there's weird pigments and strange writing and blah, blah, blah.
Like nothing that I could take to the local... you know, shop and sell.
No, all this stuff is burned away. You do notice, however, that again, the walls seem too clean. Everything seems too clean. Where's the dust? Where's the debris? Where's the damage? There are no cobwebs anywhere.
Illusory walls? Maybe?
Yeah, so do you want to do an investigation of some kind?
Do I? That is a generous, a hefty, one might even say, 4.
Okay, well, Trez will make an investigation check, and his 15 is much better. So Trez, again, will just sort of try and kick the wall as if to challenge the illusion. And the first one is a failure, and he ends up hurting his foot. And then the second one is also a failure, and you just hear him swearing curse words, kicking walls, and being super busy.
It's these groans of pain and frustration, and it sounds like a monster from, you know, just out of sight. Like, fuck!
It's just a dumb dwarf. Yeah, but the third one, he kicks something, and it just disappears, and the chirping sound stops. And in the corner, you see what looks like a little mechanical jewel cricket just sort of dims suddenly, as if it has deactivated. And the illusion falls, and there is a beautiful former library. All the books are gone. All of them. There should be hundreds of them stacked floor to ceiling. There should be things. You can see dust pools where there should be things. And Trez just says, like, four or five really long involved curse words in Dwarvish that you don't necessarily understand. But it's empty.
Bruff would like to make an investigation check to see whether or not there are any trails, any disturbances in the dust, or any indications with this newfound section of the room.
Okay, go ahead.
That's an 18.
Yeah, so Bruff can tell somebody obviously cleaned this out, and pretty recently. So books have been, ripped apart, and bookshelves were moved, and there were a whole bunch of hidden compartments in here. This was an alchemist's or a mage's library, and suitably, secretively, this person tried to hide all kinds of stuff. But as far as you can tell, it's pretty much been cleaned out.
So no books, nothing left on the shelves whatsoever.
Nothing. It is empty.
Well, that rules out the, one book left, pull down on that book, bookshelf opens thing. Well, guys, I'm out of ideas, but, and I'll just start looking about the room for any other opening or any, passageways.
Prima.
Yeah.
So Prima's poking around for stuff. She can't find anything. She's having difficulty, She's very upset that this library is gone, and so she and Trez are just having both little hissy fits about all the stuff that should be in here right now. And Prima will actually try to destroy the little cricket, the little mechanical jewel cricket in the corner. But when she tries to hit it, her club bounces off, as if the cricket is protected by something much greater than her, which just pisses her off even more. So she will try and do another strength check to destroy the cricket. And she fails.
Go ahead.
Well, at this point, she and Trez are very interested in this little cricket that seems to be indestructible.
The oaf, lacking class that is Co, we'll go over and we'll try. How big is this cricket?
About the size of your fist.
He will try and scoop up in his two hands this cricket.
So the cricket seems to like you, Co. It makes little inhuman babbling noises. The little light in its ruby jewel back kind of lights up again. It seems to be responding to you as a gnome. It likes you.
Sebastian? Sorry. I would like to, I know I don't have telepathy, but I would like to send out the good vibes. It says, pets, the best pets, good best pets, and I would like to try and pet this little cricket.
It likes that very much. So whatever you're doing, it is definitely picking it up, and it is cuddling, and it's making happy chirping noises, and the little light, more affectionate you are to it, the light gets stronger.
It's going on my shoulder. And I just set it in front of me in my palms, right? Like, I've got both my palms cupped, and it's like smack dab in the middle. Just kind of holding it up in front of my face, and I kind of tilt it a little bit to the left shoulder, tilt it to the right. Like, which shoulder do you want? Do you care? Because
It's interesting. When you put it on your shoulder, Trez suddenly says, "Where did you go?" So when the little light lights up, and when you tuck him on your shoulder, suddenly you realize that your companions can't see you anymore. It's almost like you have a minor illusion of camouflage.
At which point, given this beautiful opportunity, which one should, for the sake of science, test, I would like to try and pickpocket the pretty scroll that I couldn't have earlier.
From Prima?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Go for it.
Advantage or disadvantage, regular roll?
Sleight of hand is dexterity, which would require your ankle, so disadvantage.
I mean, dexterity is in the hands, right? It's not the foot that's quicker than the eye. Two.
Yeah, she totally feels you, and she, like, sort of grabs your hand as you try and dig around in her bag, and then shakes really hard.
Yeah.
It says, no, this is mine, and then throws you away.
And then stumbles down. Okay, yeah.
But now you have a little pet cricket, and anytime you notice that when you pet him or when you make affectionate noises to him, the little ruby light glows and your camouflage increases. And then the less you pay attention to him or, you know, the less he acknowledges your presence, the ruby will dim and your camouflage disappears.
I look at the cricket and I'm like, can you understand me?
No response.
Flash once, yes. Flash twice, if no.
No response.
Okay.
But he does seem to like talking to you, so the little light is nice and bright as you're talking to it.
I pet this little cricket and I stick it back on my shoulder and I'm like, you know, I don't get them either, buddy. And, you know, I don't really get me, so I don't expect you to get me, but I get you and I appreciate you for appreciating me. And let's just do this thing together. So, hey, guys, can anyone see me right now with my cricket?
Nope.
What if I take the cricket off my shoulder and just hold it?
They can see you.
Hey guys, I learned a new trick. Put it on my shoulder, invisible. Take it off, put it up. And then I just look at it, I'm like, I'm sorry. I know that you're not a toy, but you are amazing. And then I put
you
it
actually,
back.
You actually do think he's a toy. It reminds you of some of the children's toys that the rock gnomes used to make.
Hmm. You're not a toy, but you might be a toy, but I'm not toying with you. So I go ahead and – do I have a satchel? Yes, I do.
Yes.
I'm going to go ahead and put Jiminy in my satchel. And I'll just – yeah, I'll go back up to the group and so, like, yay, found my thing. How we doing?
So – Trez lets you know that he is definitely going to steal that from you at some point.
Huh. And then, do I get a sense of how many hit points Trez has?
No.
Okay. Fair enough.
Okay.
I latch my satchel.
Smart move.
And I kind of put my hand in, like, the little opening in the satchel, kind of, you know, just weasel it, my hand in there, and I just kind of pet this thing while it's in the satchel so that it's ready to go invisible at a moment's notice.
Okay. Well, yeah. Okay. That's nice.
Uh-huh. That's all.
Okay. So you can see that from this room, you can either go right back out to the tunnel that you guys came out of, or through the library, there seems to be a staircase leading down into another room or another set of rooms, that you can't see from this angle.
Another dimension. I will... As Bruff you know, leave these fools and start making my way, torch in hand, towards this lower level.
Okay. What you hear is what could be a fountain or water falling. And you, again, get the moment that you step out of the library down the stairs, you again see a memory of a very intimidating man. So it's almost as if you are watching this man coming down the stairs from the bottom of the landing. So this memory is not your own. It's almost as if you were the boy again.
But do I feel the emotion of, like, who this person is? Like, yeah. This yes. is teacher, this is master, this is grandpa, whatever.
All you feel is that this is a terrible person that you need to avoid, and you have stolen something. So you have that instant guilt and shame of, like, I have something that I shouldn't, and the boss is coming to get me. And then the memory releases you.
Bruff will, overwhelmed momentarily by his animal nature, slink to the side of the wall where it is, you know, always safer, right? As you feel your way out along the inside of a cave or a cavern. And we'll then just kind of shake it off and press on.
Okay. So each one of you, as you leave the library, gets that same image. So each person suddenly has that memory of this incredibly tall, very dark, intimidating figure. Very black hair, black armor. That's been tooled with some sort of, like, elaborate crest, and that armor itself is well worn, and it looks like it is heavily used and very familiar to the bearer, and he is not at all happy to see this child.
Huh. Anything particular about him stand out?
Which one are you asking for?
I am asking, actually, come to think of it, I guess about both, but predominantly, is there anything about this, you know, evil person that stands out or that I should be wary of or make note of, like their clothes or anything?
So, Trez does not recognize this person at all. Prima, it reminds him, the individual reminds her of someone, but she can't quite place who. Ko, you think this person looks just like the king. So from your days of theater, performing for royalty, well, you know, and you always had to have the king's image for masks.
Yeah, exactly. That son of a bitch.
Yeah, it looks like the king. But it's the king from a different time almost. So when you knew him, he was old and obviously, like, not in the best of health, and he had lived a hard life. This king is not old at all. This is a very young king.
Ruthless. Fire in his eyes. Nice. Huh. Okay. Well, I mean, he's not really there, and we all know this, right?
Right.
So I'm going to press on and see, you know, as we, I guess, go on through here. As Ko, I'm going to check and see if there's anything that stands out.
So there is a door. Right as you reach the bottom of the stairwell, there is a door that seems to lead nowhere. And then there's another stairwell that leads deeper down into the caverns.
I would like to go investigate the door that leads nowhere.
Okay. How would you like to investigate this?
First, I would like to don my cricket as Ko.
Okay. So you give him a little pet.
A couple extra pets for luck. Fuck yeah.
Okay.
And then I would like to go and do an investigation check on this door to nowhere.
Okay, as you run your fingers down the door, you notice that your hand seems to be tingling, and it actually seems to be burning just a little bit.
Burning fire, burning cold, burning literally just sensation of burning.
It feels like acid.
And how many damage do I take?
Just one for now.
Just one now at 12.
Yeah. And you're going to continue to take damage unless you can do something about this, so.
Help! Help! I call for help.
And nobody cares. The dwarf is like, oh, nice. Poison. Yeah, you probably shouldn't touch it. But he doesn't know how to fix you. And the barbarian human does not even acknowledge that you need help. She does not care at all.
Do I have an any healing implements or anything on my person?
You do not, but Bluff remembers that the poison can sometimes be burned. It's volatile. So he just goes ahead and grabs your hand and sticks it in a torch.
Yeah, I mean, it's been that kind of day.
Yeah, but it does help you. So you take 5 fire damage, but you are now no longer being burned by the contact poison.
At 7 health, but you're doing stellar.
Yeah, you're doing good, buddy.
Oh, co.
Okay, so do you want to continue to investigate this door?
Do I get the feeling that it could get any worse?
So the dwarf will make fun of you. He'll call you a little pansy, and he'll just go ahead and try and kick the door in. And it doesn't work, and now he's going to take disadvantage on everything because he just broke his foot.
I would like, and I know this is with disadvantage, but I think that just from sheer flavor, it's worth it. I would like to try and throw slash push the dwarf through the door.
Okay, strength check, please.
How about I had a second thought as I was going through that, and I changed my mind. That's a two.
So when you try and push him, he just like puts his hand on your forehead and just like
No.
flicks you backwards.
No.
Bad gnome. No.
Right.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. Okay, so Prima is gonna push both of you out of the way, and she's gonna mutter something disparaging about both of you, and she's just gonna try and break down the door. And she will not do it. So she hits it, and it just bounces her right back, and she will take. Six damage.
What is this door made out of?
A great question. Who's asking?
Bruff. Because Bruff is thinking about just burning it down if it's, something that can be set alight. And that is a 19 if I'm rolling. As
Oh,
Bruff.
okay. So as Bruff, you can tell that the door is not made of a natural material. It is made of something like metal, but more flexible. Something like wood, but much harder.
Mithril? Actually, no, that's just straight up alloy. Okay. Is there any marking, any symbol, anything on the door?
There is what looks like a perfect diamond in the middle of it.
And the cricket isn't diamond shaped, is it?
No, but the little jewel on his back is.
Okay. I didn't know if it was going to be the scroll or the cricket. I'd like to look at Jiminy and say, Jimbo, I promise that you're not going to get stuck in this contraption, but I got to try something real quick. So just go nanai for a minute. And then I flip him over and then I just and twist it. Yeah. And just.
So you don't have to. Once you hold Jiminy up to the door, part of it just sort of melts away, and there's like a little spot for him to fit his little body into that fits perfectly.
And do I get him back?
Yes.
Okay.
So once you offer Jiminy, the door swings open, and then you are free to enter. The little light on his back is dead and he's dormant, but you can pull him out of the door and stick him in your pocket.
Come on, Jimbo. Good boy. Come on. And then I just give him a couple little scratches behind the antennae or, the leg or whatever he prefers. I don't know. We haven't talked about that yet in our relationship. And then I pocket him.
Okay, so you can tell, so Prima will go first. And she can see that this room is very different. Instead of it being the perfect, almost too clean view of the upper levels, this room is full of smoke and ash and debris and shattered wood. This has been stormed through as if it was destroyed from the inside out.
Well, I like what they've done with the place. It's not what I would have done, but it's definitely a good use of the space.
You can, so Prima also notices that there are mushrooms and growing things. So decay, it smells rotten. It smells as if it is organic and it is decaying very, very slowly.
I just did this a couple rooms ago, and it was not a good experience. Ko probably doesn't have that greatest sense of smell, so he's just gonna go on in.
Okay. When he does,
He
he's
puts
gonna.
Jimmy on his shoulder so he's invisible and nothing can touch him. Go ahead, sorry.
Well, Jiminy's sleeping right now,
Yeah,
so you
no,
know.
Jiminy's in the bag, I know.
Yeah, Jiminy's in the bag. You see that this looks like what it looks like a graveyard, honestly. It looks like a tomb or like a ritual place for washing the dead.
Ooh.
Yeah, so the older bodies have all been wrapped appropriately, and they all have shrouds, and it's a crypt, and it's appropriate. There are still a couple bodies that looks like they were mid-cycle.
Is this like an
I
ossuary or?
thought that was just for bones.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm trying to figure out. Like, is it like full bodies? Are they bones? Like, what are we dealing with?
So it looks like they were full bodies at the time. There's nothing there now. It's just all dust and death, but there seems to be odd fungus kind of growing everywhere. But it looked like it was religious. It looked ritualistic. There are carvings in religious scripts. It looks like there were altars and places to wash the dead, and you know, so there were things happening in this room.
Like to go collect with a blade, not touching it with my own hands, some of the fungus among us, if you will. And then I will go look and inspect with my great deep knowledge of all forms of writing and written word, the inscriptions. This isn't going to go well.
These are covered in spider webs, as you try and find these inscriptions. They are in dwarvish. So you as a gnome could probably meet read them, but they're in a dialect that's so old that not even.
Oh, you speak your old people language?
Yeah, so Trez can read it. And he actually will read.